Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He is Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, on Sunday, in this very stadium, the Packers pull out a 26-20 overtime victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Green Bay's first home victory since late September, which is kind of a hard thing to believe in a lot of ways. But an ugly game, an up-and-down game, one of these days that did not necessarily go right for some stretches of the ball game, but the final two drives that the Packers needed, a drive to tie the game with a field goal late in the fourth quarter, and then the overtime drive, they got the job done and they got win number six.
Yeah, and paraphrasing David Bakhtiari on this, they got the points, they got the production when they needed it most down the stretch. Certainly you look at that field goal producing drive to tie the game, Mike McCarthy's decision, you know, to put the points on the board, force the overtime, trust your defense to make a play, and then you get to that overtime. Really liked the way they went from there. You have the three and outs to start the second half. They lose the tempo of the game. Tampa Bay looks to be turning things around. Their offense is getting hot. And then they start feeding the ball to Jamal Williams. You get the read option going with Brett Hundley. That was the formula for the Packers finding a way to victory for this one. Because as we found out, even though they were going against one of the worst-ranked defenses in the league, passing yards weren't there. So if you don't have the passing game, you have to turn to the running game. Jamal Williams, and on one carry, Aaron Jones came up on a big way.
Yeah, unbelievable what the Packers rookie running backs did here. Jamal Williams really pounded away. I mean, just a physical performance by a young running back. 21 carries, 113 yards, a touchdown. His touchdown run early in the game, very impressive. He gets hit a couple yards shy of the goal line and just powers his way across. So a lot of credit there to Williams. And as you said, Wes, when the game was on the line, Williams was the guy. The Packers were feeding him the ball. He was getting some nice runs on the overtime drive. He had some nice runs, caught a pass out of the backfield, tiptoed his way down the sideline for 12 yards. And then it was after that play, he sort of like waves to the sideline, hey, you know, I need a break. I got to come out. I mean, he really was the workhorse there down the stretch. So he comes out for one play. Aaron Jones, who I believe had only gone in for one snap earlier in the game and did not touch the ball on that play. He goes in, just a basic first down handoff to Aaron Jones. Jamal Williams is thinking he's going back in the game after this one play to get a rest. Aaron Jones bounces to the left, finds some open field, nice block from Jordy Nelson on the outside, and the overtime touchdown on the first drive, which is the only way you can win an overtime game on the first drive now, is to score a touchdown.
Right.
Aaron Jones dives into the end zone, and the Packers get out of there with a victory.
It was fascinating in the locker room hearing the different perspectives of that play. First off, you look at Aaron Jones. Afterwards, he was wearing the rehab chain on his neck, the self-made, almost looked like sort of put together with printer paper kind of chain that they made for him, showing his progress and quick recovery from that knee sprain. And for him to have the mental toughness, that there wasn't a hole to be had there. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers had bottled up the run inside. So he's running into the back of his offensive lineman. And as he said afterwards, a lot of times running backs, they'll just be content with that. They'll just, you don't want to lose yards. You don't want to lose the football. You live to fight another day. But as he was kind of trying to push forward, he saw the left side open up. The containment was gone there from the edge rusher from the Buccaneers. So he turns upfield, and he said he wasn't touched the entire way. He leaps into the end zone. You could not ask for a more dramatic way for the Packers to come out of there with that victory.
Yeah, and I'd be curious in some ways how many of those Buccaneers defenders actually knew that it was a different running back who was in the game. You wonder. I mean, stature-wise, they're somewhat similar. One wears 30, the other one wears 33. Yeah. There's nothing that's going to jump out at you if you're a defensive lineman or a linebacker to say there's a different guy. You know, you might not process right away that's a different guy, but obviously a different running style, and it paid off. One other thing I want to go back to, though, Wes, is the field goal drive late in the fourth quarter. Brett Hundley comes into the huddle, 6 minutes to go. The offense has had nothing but three and outs so far in the second half. They get the ball moving. A nice completion to Devontae Adams, if I recall, which gets a roughing the passer penalty tacked onto it. So the Packers are in the red zone. It comes down to a fourth and one on the 5-yard line. I thought this was a really, really difficult decision for Mike McCarthy. It had to be, because this was the only drive you put together the entire second half. do you kick the field goal, you know, take the tie and just continue to play? Or do you say, I'm not sure if we're going to get another chance to score, because if you go to overtime, you still got to try to score to win the game. Do you just go for the win right there? He said after the game, I liked the fact that we gave the defense a breather. I thought we could kick it and play defense and we'd be fine. And he was exactly right. He knew where his team stood, and it was the right call, because obviously you get stopped on that fourth and one, it's probably curtains on the ball game.
The biggest thing I thought was the defense getting a chance to rest. They played a lot of football, particularly in the second half. For them finally to get a chance to be able to sit down, the offense strings a drive together. You look at the pass catch to Jordy Nelson to get it going. Jamal Williams had some hard runs on that series. And where the game was at that point in time, yes, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were moving the ball, but you were in the midst of a 7-sack day. And there was a lot of trust that Mike McCarthy put in his defense, put into Kenny Clark and those pass rushers to be able to close the door. Even if you did give the ball back to the Buccaneers with 2 minutes to go, as it turns out, it was the right call. Mason Crosby comes through. Two very elementary kicks that he made in that game for field goals, but very important in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and obviously I think the defensive struggles in the second half had a lot to do with the fact that the offense was going three and out every time.
Yeah.
I mean, a defense is not going to be able to hold up forever, but there's more to talk about with regards to the defense, and we're going to get to that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, we talked in the opening segment about the struggles that the Packers offense was having. And really what made up the difference on the day were some really big plays by the special teams and the defense. I want to start with special teams, because we hadn't really seen the Packers special teams make what I would consider a high-impact play in a game in quite a while. But Kyler Fackrell breaks through in the second quarter, gets a hand on the punt. I know statistically it doesn't go as a blocked punt because the ball got back to the line of scrimmage, but I'm going to call it a blocked punt. I'm going to give Kyler a blocked punt here. It ends up going as a zero-yard punt, but the bottom line is it gives the Packers great field position from their special teams, which then they take in for a touchdown in the second quarter. A big play and a big momentum shift early in the ballgame.
Huge. And we've heard how many times, Mike, for the last month, Ron Zook coming up to the podium during his weekly, bi-weekly, I should say, availability with the media, saying we're so close. We're so close to that kickoff return. We're so close to making that big play in punt return. And then in that particular case, they made it. Afterwards, Kyler Fackrell was very complimentary to Joe Thomas for being the one that actually set that up. With one of the things that he did inside, and once that opened up, I believe it was with the center, they felt like there was going to be a gap for him to shoot through. Fackrell makes a big play there, and you look at what happened after that, Mike, them being able to come down, put points on the board off that, it's not a turnover, but off that big play, getting the ball at the Tampa Bay 45. Just set such a critical point in that game. Yeah. And I thought, I don't know what you made of it, but I mean, I thought overall this was one of the better, if not the best, special teams performance the Packers have had this season. When you factor in Trevor Davis, too, a career-high 30.3 yards per kickoff return.
And a long one that was called back, too, unfortunately, on a holding penalty that he didn't really need to get the yardage that he did, but the flag was thrown, and that got called back. But going back to the momentum shift that we're talking about then, so that touchdown off of that setup by the block punt with the field position, the Packers then have a 10-7 lead. Next possession for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you had mentioned the Packers put together a 7-sack day on defense, and there was no bigger sack than the one on this next possession. Kenny Clark gets his arms wrapped around Jameis Winston. Looks like he's just going to bring him down for a sack. Winston suddenly is going to try to get rid of the ball. The ball kind of flips out of his hand backwards and right into the arms of Dean Lowry, snags the fumble in midair and takes off running, and nobody gets anywhere close to him. 62 yards, a defensive touchdown. You talk about a way to pick up an offense and pick up an entire team when things aren't necessarily going all that great. That was one heck of a play by Clark and Lowry.
Yeah, it was the old Wes Hodd play from flag football in the Howard Swamico Rec League. Although I was Jameis Winston there letting the ball go and then the opposing team bringing it back for a touchdown. I don't know if you could ask for any better setup when you look at those two defensive linemen, Mike, the investment they made into Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry, how that's paid off over the past year and a half. Clark, it's his first career sack, which is somewhat misleading because that isn't exactly what his responsibility is.
Right.
It's more of a, you know, taking on those double teams. But he does sack Winston. Winston, the ball, I don't know exactly what happened on the play, but the ball comes out. Dean Lowry, almost a gift from the heavens then, just sprints. And as Clay Matthews said afterwards, showing that 5-flat 40 time, Lowry said it's 4-8 for whatever that can be, you know, whatever that's worth.
Okay.
Takes it all the way down to the end zone. He did have an interception return for a touchdown in college, but I believe it was only like 17 or 19 yards. So 62 yards to the house. Kind of gassed a little bit when he gets there, but he knew right about 50 yards in he had to go for the Lambeau leap. It's not going to win any awards for, you know, leap of the season, but for a defensive lineman, I think he did okay.
Yeah, well, the Northwestern alum there, he probably hadn't run a hadn't run full speed that distance since he ran the 40 at the combine.
Yeah.
I would imagine 62 yards for the touchdown. And the 7 sacks on the day for the defense really was what set the tone. I give the secondary a lot of credit. We saw Demarius Randall, Devon House matched up against DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans, respectively. Jameis Winston threw for 270 yards, but they didn't gash the Packers with big plays.
No.
I thought the big plays were really kept to a minimum. You know, those explosive guys like Jackson and Evans only had a couple of catches apiece, and it was the pressure on Winston, the sacks. Clay Matthews has 2.5 sacks. Kenny Clark, you mentioned he got his first career sack. He also got his second career sack. Jake Ryan gets his first career sack on a blitz from the linebacker level. 7 sacks in all, the second highest total in Packers history in the regular season. An 8-sack game in Philadelphia in 2004 is the only time Green Bay has had more of them. And really, those sacks piling up is what that's what made the difference on this day.
Yeah, big positive for the Packers to get that kind of production out of Clay Matthews. He only had 3.5 sacks coming into that contest, so him coming off of that groin injury, getting 2.5, his most since the last time the Packers played Tampa Bay in week 16 of the 2014 season. That's a big sign for the edge rushers. But I thought Kenny Clark, this day belonged to him.
Yeah.
He has 7 tackles. His other sack came after, during that 2-minute series that put the Buccaneers in this position where they actually had to just punt the ball away and didn't have a chance to score to go back ahead at the end of the game, end of regulation. And considering 2 weeks ago, Mike, he had the ankle injury, he's carted off the field, his mom's crying, he's questionable for this one, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I know he said afterwards he felt like he left some plays out there against the run, but as a pass rusher, this was by far his best performance.
Yeah, and we talked about during the week last week about not letting the Buccaneers make big plays. I thought after the opening touchdown to Cameron Brate over the top for the 7-0 lead for Tampa early, I really thought the big plays were kept to a minimum, and we saw why. You have to do that because Tampa Bay tripped over themselves a lot.
Right.
You know, a bad shotgun snap in the red zone. They had penalties. They had a lot of stuff that they had to overcome on their own. And I think the Packers not giving up the big chunks of yardage is why they held them to 20 points.
I know there was a lot of guys in the locker room that were lamenting the screen passes, obviously the production that they gave up in the run game. But that being said, what they were able to do in being opportunistic and taking the ball away, getting the sacks, getting the negative yardage plays, that's the number one reason why Tampa Bay had a hard time sustaining momentum during this game. They got a little bit of it in the third, in some part of the fourth quarter, but overall just wasn't consistent enough, and that's what allowed the Packers to pick up that much-needed W.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, we're going to throw it to a break, back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, it was not the type of game that everyone was hoping for from Brett Hundley, unfortunately. Coming off of a really solid performance against Pittsburgh, one of the top defenses in the league. I know the Packers didn't win that game, but Brett Hundley again was showing the signs that the arrow was pointing up. And unfortunately, it looks like, you know, production-wise, he takes another step backwards, 84 yards passing, 1 interception, a 48 passer rating. Not what the Packers were looking for. Getting a blocked punt, a defensive touchdown, those are the kinds of things that make up for a day when it's not the quarterback's day. But the Packers certainly hoping now with Hundley needing to go to Cleveland. Packers need to win this one. In a perfect world, it's the last game Brett Hundley has to start, because then maybe you get Aaron Rodgers back for Carolina. But the Packers need more out of Hundley. I think there's just no two ways about it.
Yeah, he was very upfront and honest about this last week and saying that, you know, he needs to get off the roller coaster. You need more consistency. Not just because that's what every offense needs. They need a consistency from the quarterback position. That's where I think sometimes you get these labels of game managers, but when you're able to do that, you keep your team in a position to win because you're not making the negative plays. He went for the shot early to Jordy Nelson. It didn't work out. Ends up leading to the interception.
Right.
The downfield passing game passed outside of 10 yards. Struggled again. The one adjustment I thought they made that was really positive in the second half, particularly in those last two series, is the read option and the incorporation of that. He did have 7 scrambles for 66 yards, which powered a 199-yard day on the ground for Green Bay.
Yeah, well, half of those 66, 32, were the two read option runs, a 14-yarder and an 18-yarder. And the Packers, frankly, they caught the Buccaneers off guard with that. They didn't see that coming, and those were two big plays for the quarterback.
Yeah, and I was talking to Jari Evans about this after the game, and one of the reasons why that works so well is because when you're running the ball the way they did with Jamal Williams, and we didn't get into all the statistics in the first segment, but 21 carries for 113 yards, a season-long carry of 25 yards after one of those big plays in the first half, getting great production there. What you can do if the play-action game, if the rollout game is not working, you can turn to the read option because it is in some ways pulling the rug out from beneath the defense. They cue in on trying to stop Jamal Williams. It allows Brett Hundley to use his speed downfield. We've seen that in small segments of this season, but I thought in this particular contest it was more important than any other time this year for the Packers. He really came through with his feet. Yes, you want to get the passing game going. No question about it. 77 yards of total passing yards is not going to get it done, but Brett Hundley was able to kind of help out that cause with what he did on the run.
Yeah, and I just wonder when I look back at this game and you think about it, you look at Brett Hundley's short history here, you wonder if that pass to Geronimo Allison, when he's wide open on the opening drive, if he hits that for a touchdown, he misses him, the Packers have to kick a field goal, you leave 4 points on the field. If he hits him for a touchdown there, you just wonder if everything about the rest of the day goes differently, because we saw in the last home game, opening drive, you know, against Baltimore's defense, you drive all the way down, but you make a mistake, you get picked in the end zone, and then, you know, the rest of the day was just a real struggle for the quarterback. You look at the Pittsburgh game, opening drive, a coverage bust, Randall Cobb wide open, the pass is right on target, 40-yard touchdown, Packers are on the board, and Brett Hundley is off to a really, really productive, impressive day. So that opening drive, that, you know, those, he's got to find a way to overcome that early mistake and not let it set him back too much.
Confidence and tempo is so important in this game. I know it sounds like a broken record when we mention it.
Yeah.
It sounds like a cliche, but you really do look at when you get those first downs and you're able to start moving the ball downfield. That's one of the things that's kind of been such a quandary about what the Packers have done in these 6 starts with Hundley. Each one of them, they've moved the ball deep down into the red zone of the opposing team. The one particular contest, I believe it was the Baltimore Ravens, they didn't get points because of the turnover.
Right.
But every time, they've threatened the opponent's end zone. And in this case, they were able to get some momentum early. Second half coming out, they just weren't able to establish it again. Those are learning opportunities for Hundley, because here's the end game for him. You got to come out, you have to beat the Cleveland Browns, but there is potentially Aaron Rodgers at the end of that tunnel. When this season's all done, regardless of what happens, Hundley's going to have a great opportunity this offseason to go back through these 6 starts, 7 starts, look at the film, dissect what happened, and try to progress his game. Because really, for him personally, for a guy that wants to start in this league, that's where the value is, outside of obviously trying to get the Packers some wins.
Yeah, absolutely. And logistically speaking, we know that Aaron Rodgers is officially on the comeback trail. The Packers designate him to return from injured reserve by putting him into practice on Saturday. So now he has to sit out one more game, and if all looks good, he could be out there in Carolina very shortly. But before we go to a break, Wes, picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11th. 11, which is coming up soon, by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to Packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford next to Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, quickly before we go, the recap of where things stand in the NFC with regards to the playoff picture. The Packers are 6-6 on the outside looking in at this point, but the Carolina Panthers lost. They picked up their fourth loss of the season. The Atlanta Falcons lost, which was their fifth loss of the season. The Detroit Lions also lost, and they are now 6-6. The only one that really didn't go the Packers' way in terms of what you're hoping for was the Seattle Seahawks got a big home victory over the previous 10-1 Philadelphia Eagles. So the Seahawks at 8-4, Packers still, bottom line is you need to win out and you still need some more help.
Yeah, you do. But I mean, this was a positive weekend for the Packers as opposed to last week where they got no help whatsoever.
Yeah.
The Vikings coming through for them once again. Certainly the Saints proving their worth against the Carolina Panthers. You have to keep winning your games. That has to be the tunnel focus right now for Green Bay. But if you're listening to the peripherals, the voices out there, I think generally speaking, this was a positive weekend for Green Bay.
Yeah, and as we, you know, we'll do some scoreboard watching here as things go along. Yeah. These teams in the NFC South, the Falcons have some tough games. The Panthers now are going to play the Vikings before they play Green Bay. Seattle's got to play the Jaguars, and they also have to play the Rams, who are leading that division. So a lot of stuff here left to get figured out. Right now, the Packers, they want to beat the Cleveland Browns, get to 7-6, and then see if you get your quarterback back.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do right now. And also credit to the Baltimore Ravens, a big win over the Detroit Lions to improve to 7-5.
Yeah, the Baltimore Ravens right in the mix now in the AFC, but we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers. For the team account, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.